The Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2023. This is the final stream tonight, which is the sixth night. And I'm now here with Gifts, the artist formerly known as Gifts Ungiven, I should say. She was on last year. So welcome back to Millennial Gifts.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Excellent. You're very welcome. A lot of people wanted me to invite you on again this year. They asked, is Gifts going to be back on? So I think you were a popular guest last year.
Great.
So would you like to introduce yourself to anyone who doesn't know of you and tell people about what you've been doing this year?
Yeah, so I'm a YouTuber, technically. I am an artist, a fine artist, but I mostly make YouTube videos. That's my primary thing that I do. I do make music as well. But in any case, I've moved more towards doing commentary type videos. I do it in an artful kind of fashion, I guess you could say. But yeah, I've actually collaborated this year. I have a collaboration with Arctos. They're fantastic. They have very similar values as myself. And so I felt like it was a really good fit. And I have been approached by people before, but, you know, I really like what they are going for. And yeah, we've just kind of been working together to make these videos about culture, art, and, you know, our collective identity in general.
Yeah, and I think it's important. It's a good thing to find a group of people that you can work with, because it's nice to have a space. I like to have a place within the movement. And sometimes you have to build that yourself. And sometimes there's, well, you've done that with your channel, and also finding collaborations. Collaborations are great because, or even, you know, a sort of home, as it were, is great because it enables a certain fizz, whereas working on your own all the time can be not always, it can be a bit demoralizing.
It can be, yes. And it's nice to have someone there to, like, crack the whip. They're like, hey, where's the next video? So it's a nice challenge. I actually really enjoy it. Otherwise, I'd just be working at a snail's pace. So my product has gone up a lot. Yeah, it's great.
That should be linked in the description below. Let me just check. I'm sure it will be, because I use all the links. That Yes, it's all there. Okay, good. All right. So you wanted to talk about, last year we ended up talking, went on a tangent and ended up talking about respective time at art college, which is it's understandable. It's happened with other guests as well, like Dangerfield, because it's a common experience and it's an unusual experience, you know, because
yes,
most
it
people
is.
Don't go to art school, so it's not something I'm ashamed. Well, I am ashamed of going to art school, but I'm not ashamed of talking about it. but I am. I do hope that it didn't leave you feeling. Yeah, I know that you had things you wanted to say. So anyway, this year we're going to talk about mythos and the importance, kind of related to what I was talking about in the previous stream with Dave Martell and Imperium Press, the importance of mythos to identity and to culture, and also the elements of mythos, and perhaps also male and female, how that ties into all this. So would you like to get us started?
Yes. So where I'm coming at with this subject is that there's definitely been a, you know, revisionist element in popular culture of our mythos. Obviously, the BBC will do like a segment on how, you know, people of African-American descent that they're included in like British history in like a deep way, like they were Vikings or something like that. So obviously there's like a restructuring of our mythology. But there's also another element here, aside from kind of making it like fantasy, you know, it's kind of like Disneyland, or it's, you know, bastardized because some other group of people is taking part in it, even though that's not true. There's also the philosophical end, the academic end of things, where, you know, you have things like meta-narratives and grand narratives, and now we've kind of broken things down into micro-narratives, which are more like personalized stories and stuff like that. So in our culture, generally speaking, we have these more secular overarching stories that we all kind of live by and affect culture and affect political discourse. So, you know, a movie will be made in line with meta-narratives, you know, like something like colonialism or feminism or something like that. But in the past, we had very, very different stories, overarching stories that informed us of who we were as a collective. And obviously now the shift has gone from something that's more pertaining to our roots, our ancestral background, to what, you know, postmodernists will say is non-inclusionary, that Odin and you know, a lot of these, you know, European ancestral stories, this old ancient mythos is non-inclusive. So there's been a shift to, you know, meta-narratives. And now, you know, a meta-narrative would be, like I said, colonialism, Enlightenment era thinking, all sorts of stuff goes into that. But now we're breaking it down to the individual. Like now we've removed it and reduced it even further down. And now they just want to talk about personal experiences and stuff like that, like being gay. So yeah, we've had a massive departure and a breaking down from a collectivist, root European centric understanding of our stories. And now we're at the point where we're atomized, we're individualized, family is taken out, and we have the liberal worldview that we have.
Yeah, because any culture has to be supported, bolstered, not just intellectually in the academy, but also for the masses, usually with stories and art, or what passes for art in our day and age. It's always there, and it's there to reinforce. I mean, you could say propaganda. There's a whole thing about the distinction between art and propaganda. We don't need to go into that. It's sufficient to say that the artifacts of a culture are often made in order to reinforce that culture.
Yes.
Otherwise, they wouldn't really function. And so this is why it's kind of ironic when they say that, you know, our culture is exclusionary, or has been exclusionary, non-inclusionary. Because, <Yeah. laughs> well, of course it was, because it was our culture. So it wasn't for anyone else. And I actually, you know, it's obvious what I'm going to say here. I don't really trust the idea of a culture that is for anyone, for everyone. I don't really understand why you would set out to do something like that. Well, I mean, well, it's, yeah, I don't think
we know why
to work out. Yeah. I don't think they expect this to be healthy. It's more of a deculturing thing that they're doing, really, isn't it? It's
100%.
This attachment.
Well, yeah. And there's two elements here. So Evola talks about the Ghibelline era and the Knights Templar, and there were spiritual implications to the things that they believed, but there were also their ancestral roots that they were contending with and they were preserving. What ends up happening after that time period is the Renaissance. I actually have a big problem with the Renaissance, because that's when humanism starts to, you know, these humanist elements and this, you know, move away from religion and so forth starts to come about, because there's a revitalization of like Greek philosophy and culture. And the two things that are going on here is there is an organic element where we just had a natural interest in moving in that direction, in a humanist direction. But simultaneously, there is an exterior group of people, or, you know, outside parties who obviously, you know, groups of people compete with each other that have kind of taken advantage of that direction and may have even been, you know, a guiding force in pushing us in that direction. And obviously, you know, I do appreciate humanistic, individualistic elements of, you know, the Enlightenment. Everyone does. But obviously, there's been some massive catastrophic implications to doing so, which means, you know, severing us from our roots. And that's definitely something that's happened.
It's happened in a way that's even more subtle than a lot of people realize. You know, when you talk to a boomer now and they can't understand the idea of caring about your group, that's because of all the culture they've consumed over the course of their lifetimes. It's
right.
The message has been there all the throughout the whole thing. And it's left them in a very, I think, in a very different state from their parents even. But definitely their grandparents, you know, our great grandparents, people born at the end of the 19th century, start of the 20th, would have had a very different conception of the world, which would be more close to the one that we are trying to recapture, which is that I belong to my nation. I am here, that this is the story, this is the situation. And I think after World War II, and we can go into the history of this if you want. I think it is relevant. After World War II, an entirely new notion was constructed of what a good human being should be. And it really should be someone who doesn't have any attachments, who's infinitely compatible with different peoples. And after all, we are all individuals. So our group identities just don't matter. And the things that our parents and grandparents cared about, that was just a rational attachment. The rational thing is to have none of those. And, you know, you can understand the logic. It is actually internally illogical. It's just bullshit. It just leads to an unhealthy outlook on life.
The boomers have basically failed to pass the torch. Every single generation has successfully passed on their wealth, so like their land or whatever, but also traditions and an understanding of who we've been as a collective over time. And yeah, that's definitely something that's been broken down. You know, now a boomer just wants to go to Hawaii. I'm going to use all my money on like vacationing and not imparting that to you, which their parents did for them. It's absolutely horrible. But yeah, this is something that develops, you know, coming out of the Enlightenment era. And we've definitely all since been dealing with that. And so I guess where to go next with this is that one of the biggest narratives that's kind of been such an issue during the, you know, post-World War era is, you know, something like the Holocaust. You know, that became a really big narrative that we all kind of live by. Maybe not you and I.
I'm just kidding.
But we've all been very committed to like reconciling what happened. And all minorities kind of fit under that umbrella. It's like Holocaust and then everything kind of, you know, falling beneath it. But all of that is put into question, you know, like what is our collective spirit in light of, you know, the collective unity that, you know, the people of Israel have, right? You know, Jews seem very collectivized. They seem to have, they're willing to basically genocide a group of people in Gaza in order to preserve themselves. And so this idea that, you know, we are all just individuals, that white people are this uniquely evil group of people that will commit atrocities, against other people, is really being put into question now. So that's why there's a revitalization of, wait a second, you know, who are we? Who, you know, what's our tie to Christianity and so forth? So, but yeah, just to take things one step further. I do think it's interesting in the aftermath of what's happened geopolitically with Israel and things that are going on in Gaza, that, you know, even taking a neutral stance on this position is not acceptable. So someone like Candace Owens has gotten a lot of backlash, you know, someone like Ben Shapiro saying, you know, no, you know, my collective identity is acceptable and good and something we should all recognize, but you're not allowed to do that. And then, you know, when Candace Owens is getting criticized by him for taking a neutral stance, you know, he says, oh, well, you know, here are my opinions about the Bible. And she says, well, you know what, Ben, maybe the Bible isn't really about you, which honestly happens to be true, which comes back to the conversation about, you know, mythos and legend, why this stuff is important. I think people tend to ignore the Bible because, you know, they want to look at Odin and all the Norse mythology, and that's great, or like Greek mythology. But Christian mythos, the Bible, is also a central key part of who we are. And on, you know, the grand scale, like these issues that we're having in the Middle East, in large part have to do with our past with, you know, people that are in Israel right now. And we have to understand and reconcile what that means. So this is why mythos is important. We need to understand our past really well, or we're not going to understand why these things are happening.
Absolutely. And it also leaves you just deracinated. I mean, it leaves you with the Walmart and the retail, the strip mall. And you can't even begin to justify anything else. So why would you want any? How could you justify wanting anything more than that? It leaves you like a default human being, like a husk, basically. And I don't want to say that every boomer is a husk. That's obviously not true. But the mentality, see, this is the other thing. It's not just the boomers, because Gen X, similar. Millennials, similar. There's a lot to be said here. We could do a whole thing about the differences between the generations. Especially with this specific aspect. But I think the point is that we are all affected by this. Some of us have an effortless attachment to our country, but a lot of us just don't. And I often bring this up. I've often brought this experience up that I had when I was in Oslo in 2017. And there was a conference going on, and I was sitting outside the hotel, I think having a cigarette, probably. I saw this group of Norwegian teenagers just walking, and it was Gay Pride was on, and they were walking, presumably to the Pride March, with the rainbow flags. And I remember thinking, what is the difference between them and a group of teenagers in California? Or London, really, or Berlin, you know, there isn't, and this is a huge problem, and yet it's one that could be, I think, fixed relatively quickly. People say once it's gone, you can't get it back. It's a precious thing, and it is gone. It's destroyed, and that's it. I don't see that. I think it could be reconstructed,
and oh yeah,
because people just, you know, kids, babies, don't know the difference. You know, they don't know this thing has been recreated, this thing has been reconstructed. To them, yeah, it might as well be 1,000 years old or 5,000 years old. And then they just absorb it. So I don't think that everything is lost here at all. I think it's purely a matter of who is in charge.
100%. We've had a revitalization of our culture before. Of our collective spirit, and it literally needs to happen, or else, you know, Western civilization is, you know, going to disappear. But yeah, people like Richard Wagner, as an example, literally did that. You know, a lot of people don't know the history of what was going on in Germany during, you know, that time period around the Enlightenment. The romanticist wanted to imbue a spirit back into everything and reconnect people with their roots, because even at that point in time, you know, there was sort of, you know, like the Rococo era was like a stripping down of a more, like a deeper, truer connection to emotion or to their ancestry. And so, you know, people like Richard Wagner were able to mythologize and create music and art that ended up, you know, birthing, you know, a bunch of philosophy and psychologists and whatnot to be able to reawaken the German people, which led to all sorts of great benefits and everything, obviously, you know, understanding who they were. And it's like a lot of complicated history that I don't really want to get into. But in any case, my point is that there's no reason to be blackpilled. We simply need to decide that the meta narratives, the micro narratives, the direction that we're going into, these stories that they tell us where we're the oppressor, that, you know, our ancestry is actually intertwined with African Americans or any other group of people. We simply just need to say, no, that's not the case. We're not going to do that. We're going to do our own thing and reclaim it. And that's why it's really important that we make sure that we get to a point where we understand our mythos. We understand the origins properly, but then on top of that, we reclaim it and resynthesize it with things that are currently going on right now. Because, you know, obviously, like the trad thing, you can't just go back to the past. You have to like merge it with something new, with the new things that have happened. It's a complicated thing. But in any case, mythologists are important. They always come back around, but you do need patronage too. That's like another element. But I'm not blackpilled at all. If people are willing to put their money into this and they're willing to hire people, you know, give patronage to people who are very talented, there is absolutely no reason why we can't reclaim our culture and our identity and be on a healthy, vitalistic path again.
I completely agree. As I said, it's... See, once it's the norm, it's the norm. And it would take, you know, I've often said this about Americans coming, like moving over to Europe. You know, their kids that they had here wouldn't know about, I mean, maybe they would sense that their parents aren't quite at home in Italy or whatever. But for them, it would just be the norm. So I think that it's very important to remember that. This seems profound, and it is profound, and yet I think it's something that could be quite easily remedied.
Definitely.
Almost completely remedied. So important to remember that. Also, the thing about funding is, of course, important. I mean, again, I've been saying this for years. The problem is, especially with today's technology, you could make a film fairly cheaply. The problem would be getting actors, because they would destroy their careers by having anything to do with anything that didn't fit the mold. But the second problem would be distributing the film. And this, you know, there's a whole industry for doing this for a reason. It's very difficult to distribute a film and to promote anything, really. And so that's why an industry has arisen to do that. The trouble is that if you're cut out of that industry, you're screwed. And this is the problem for us. I suspect that technology depends on current trajectories continuing, but if they do, I think that technology is probably going to evolve so much that these old infrastructures will become obsolete.
Oh, yeah.
Hollywood is just kind of... Well, it is surplus requirements at this stage. It's like a big hulking behemoth that isn't needed anymore, and is also rotten for obvious reasons.
It's
so obvious. But my point is that I think this could happen in the future. But I still think it won't be like five people with $1,000. That's never going to... It's always going to require more than that. And that is why we need funding. I think that's a very real problem. But it's also worth saying again, it's not the end of the world, because things are... Well, first of all, the technology is advancing all the time. You can do ridiculous things nowadays with software. More advanced than the kind of software that I'm familiar with. But the other thing is, things are changing. And I do think that, again, I don't want to give people false hope and I don't want to set them up for disappointment, but it does feel to me that we're on the precipice of something here. And it might take a year, it might take 10 years to unfold, or I might be wrong. But it feels like this is a sort of pivotal moment in the course of the 21st century. Certainly partly because of the Gaza stuff.
Yeah.
Not just because of that. I think also the world that we grew up in, it really is kind of gone.
It is.
So there needs to be something else. And also the whole governmental structure. I was talking about this with, I've already forgotten who it was just last night. Dershaton Macker and various others, Oren McIntyre. It's come up several times that the whole infrastructure of globalism is also seems to be in some way falling apart. So there is going to be. Do you want to talk about that?
I actually do have some thoughts there. So obviously they're losing the narrative because Hollywood. When we just had televisions and movie theaters and stuff like that, that was extremely useful. They could, keep anyone out that they didn't want to say anything. With social media, like, they're trying to do some things to keep people at bay, but obviously with people like Elon Musk, stepping in, it's becoming increasingly more difficult and actually just making matters far worse because, Elon Musk told them to, screw off the other day and that he doesn't want their funding.
That's one of the things that makes me think this is a big moment.
Oh, yeah.
Not have happened. That something like that simply wouldn't have happened 5 years ago or even a year ago.
Yeah, and he just went on this tour, going to Israel and they paraded him around and humiliated him.
And again, we know what the Israel tour usually means. It usually means the person comes back cucked.
Yes,
and that's what everyone was expecting here, and then he told Bob Iger to go fuck himself.
I'm really impressed. I am extremely impressed with Elon Musk. But yes, it's things like this. Technology was benefiting this old order. That, like, the old technology that they had with movie theaters and newspapers and all of that stuff allowed them to control everything. It's very draconian. But now this is open. And obviously the election of Trump is a tribute to that. But then also what's going on with the opinions that people have about what's going on in Gaza. They can't really control people sharing all of these videos of kids being pulled out of the rubble. That's pretty damning evidence that what's going on there is that's like an abuse of that group of people. But going back to the topic of, like, globalization and advancing that idea, that was done through old media. But we too can if we get back to our roots, we can, revitalize our collective spirit, which is something that we need to do. And I do think that we can do it. You need some autists in the mix, which there are a bunch of people out there who are artistically, like, they're really talented and they just, like, they really have a passion for trying to fix the issues that we have in an artistic manner. I've met a lot of great people who are willing to do this. And I myself, if I have the time and my life allows for it with the trajectory it's on, I'd like to contribute there. But yeah, first it's going to take, us working together, grassroots, and at least trying to pull off something pretty impressive with, very little resource. It's going to take some autism, but yeah, we have AI. You can produce the most incredible footage with AI. The cameras that we can use even on our phones are absolutely incredible to tell a story. You can use AI art to tell a story. I think what's more important is that people are recognizing these important stories and that they start telling them in an artistic format, even if you're just doing it at all, even like a simple comic. Somebody can make a comic. So I totally think it's possible. But of course, once things start to develop, eventually we're going to need donors, people with a lot of money to be able to make this happen. But yeah, the point here is that, aside from technology advancing in order to make art more easily, the communication aspect they're not in control of it anymore. It's so clear, you know, Hollywood's not what it used to be. Netflix, I think a lot of people are getting sick of Netflix, to be quite honest. Most people are just entertained by being on Twitter, being on the internet, and seeing things happen in real time.
Yeah, I think that the masses are going to be entranced by Netflix and Disney for a while. I wouldn't expect that what the likes of us would be likely to make, I don't think it would reach or mean much to the normies immediately. I think it would start and gradually colonize the culture. Initially, you know, the normies, you know, you could talk about the normies all night.
Oh yeah.
The problem of the masses. But yeah, I think for now, at least they don't even realize that there is anything better than Marvel movies. You know,
I think they're going to start getting sick of it.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
It's so hollow. It's so incredibly shallow and stupid.
And uncreative too. That's why they're like doing these rehashes of the same things. I think this group of people doesn't actually have creativity. And institutions are also being broken down. So people are starting to not trust, you know, the media. The people have lost a lot of trust in the media. And obviously, well, over time, as people start to, you know, develop a better understanding of culture and why it's important, people are also going to start questioning their media too. So I can definitely see in the future that, you know, parents decide, you know what, this doesn't have the right values. I'm not going to let my kids watch Netflix. And yeah, it's not creative. So I have a hard time on Netflix. I don't think there's anything interesting there. But yeah, the normies, they're not too hard to please. So sorry, normies.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we've often said, they'll just have to be carried along. And, you know, they won't really even know what's going on. I don't think they ever do.
No, they don't.
It's a strange thing to see, but it does seem to be the way that society actually works and evolves. Most people have no idea what's going on most of the time. But yeah,
you have to accept it. Yeah. An acceptance of that aspect of reality is just something I've come to terms with, and you have to guide them.
It's something that I've really struggled with because, you know, you keep hoping for them to be more like us, but they're never going to be, and society wouldn't work if they were. That's
correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say about the post 1945 narrative? Because I think that it's interesting. I don't know how much you would have to say about it. We've already gone into it. But in terms of how it informs, how it shapes the world today and the world of the media today?
Well, one of the things that you'll notice is that, there's a fixation, and you brought this up earlier, on the individual. And there is sort of a lovelessness there isn't an interest in the future. So the boomer has been convinced that their life is all that matters. And there's nothing beyond them. There's no reason to pass on the torch. If we were going to make media that would help us move in the right direction, we would want to focus on the collective and these more humanist, universal interpretations where we're like all inclusive. Those are going to have to disappear. And so the individual is going to have to take, we're going to have to put that to the side. We're going to have to understand how families and how our collective identity is important. So like a really good movie, actually, just as an example for people, is surprisingly, The Godfather. That is not just a gangster movie. That movie is absolutely incredible and is extremely based. That movie is a revolutionary film because it's there are a lot of political implications, but basically what it's doing is it's trying to suggest the idea that family and, you know, of course the masculine leading the family and taking on responsibility for the family, that this is really important and that, you know, the government isn't going to have your back and that your lineage is important, and that you have a right to assert yourself in the world as an authority figure too, because, you know, let's face it, the globalist system, you know, liberalization, democratization of everything, egalitarianist push is not in favor of us. It's actually, you know, the antithesis of us. It's saying that we are evil. So I think that the elements in that story are extremely profound. You know, there is kind of like a conflict with the wife. She's kind of representation of like the normie feminist who's like, oh, well, I'm going to abort your son to like stop this lineage from continuing on. And it's all to show that, you know, what the main character realizes is that his family, like the whole reason why his father did the things he did, all of the decisions, whether they were horrible or whatever, were all to protect the collective, the family. This is something that's lost in our collective understanding of, you know, what's important. And this is why the boomer will just toss this generation to the side. They don't care about you because there's no value to them in building up this world. This is, you know, another reason why our world has become so ugly. It's because nobody's willing to actually invest in making this a beautiful place for the next generations to come. It's simply just, you know, an abuse, utilitarian approach to everything. You know, it's me, let me get my fix. But in any case, we would need to understand the importance of family, of lineages, and any art that, you know, comes out, any new narratives that are formed should reinforce those ideas. So yeah, the democratization of things in art has obviously been a problem, an egalitarianist push. And then the last thing I'll say, just on lineages, is that another issue with the direction that we've gone with our storytelling, which has affected culture, is that the current, there's obviously been like a switch in power. So beforehand, the people who were carrying mythos, which now mythos is like, oh, that's a myth that's associated with falsity. There has been like a dialectical switch from mythos and legend to history. And history is basically like a scientific approach to looking at the past. And this is something Nietzsche actually warns against, that during his time, he started to notice that academics started to secularize an understanding of the past. And you know, even like Christ, he was saying that that's going to demolish our understanding and our roots, because you can't prove that Caesar exists, right? That he existed. I don't think he even has a grave. In any case, what has happened is that, you know, our ancestral ties to the past basically completely broke down with the new group of people who have basically taken over, which were led by all of these revolutions, like the Russian Revolution, everything like that. You get like kings and queens being beheaded and whatnot. And that's when that old mythos really dies. And that's when the collective spirit of the European people honestly perishes too. Because ever since then, we've had a shift towards globalization, towards democracy. And it basically a crafting and
deracination.
Right. A breaking down, like taking out your roots. And this is every single group of people. If a African comes to America, the same thing will be done to them because they're a part of this new racial program. So all of these stories that we now have is basically, you know, these meta narratives and now micro narratives are all to suit this new race that's basically being formulated through this globalist model. I mean, these people are just as racist as, you know, anybody else, as the Chinese are, because they're saying we're not advocating for your mythos, for European mythos. We are advocating for this globalist race, this new group of people that's coming to fruition. So yeah, my point is that there has been a definite switch from mythology, the terminology is being used as though it's a bad thing, as though it's a falsity. And that thing is related to our roots and it's very European centric. But now, because of a shift from those dynasties who were amplifying those mythologies, that they have all been killed off, basically, in their power. They've been gutted of their power. Now we have, you know, meta-narratives and now micro-narratives and feminism and all of these things that are being led by a new group of people. I think that's really important to understand.
Yeah. And it's also, I'll just say here that whenever I, because you're saying about this new race that's being formulated by mixing everyone together. And but before you can mix everyone together, you've got to establish that there's really nothing keeping them apart in the yes. first place. So their history just doesn't matter and all of that. And whenever I see this, it's just awful. You know, whenever I see these, and it happens in Britain as well, these British TV series, but also especially American TV series, where it's a bunch of people completely mixed, very multiracial cast. And the assumption is that each of these people is basically an empty vessel, except for their incredible individuality, which comes from nowhere. It just comes from, I don't know. I don't know what it is actually that where it's supposed to come from, if not from their genes and their heritage and their history.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, right. But either way, we're meant to think they're all wonderful individuals and everything else is irrelevant. Their whole past is irrelevant. And so they're spontaneously unique and wonderful. And they are open to everything. They are compatible with everything. There are no limits. And what that actually means is that they have no grounding at all. There's no identity there. There's no depth. It might as well just be androids. And that is what you see. And the way that this is done is to convert everyone into a consumer. Because then they are equal. Everyone is equally a consumer. Everyone is at the same standing in the consumer society and therefore interchangeable and therefore miscegenatable.
Well, yeah, no, that's actually an excellent point. There is a kind of refocusing that's, you know, there's like an attempt. I don't know if you've noticed it on Frog Twitter, you know, or right wing Twitter to move people away from nationalism to libertarianism. And that's something that, you know, as like
oh,
you know,
the God, right-wing, is this like that awful Richard Hananiar, that kind of thing?
It's like
about merit, like high IQ and all that.
Well, so what it is that basically there's a focus from, you know, the like, you know, someone like BAP, as an example, will say, oh, well, you know, you should be interested in Ayn Rand. You shouldn't be, you know, like Nietzsche was not a nationalist, but this isn't true. And I'm not going to get into why Nietzsche was a nationalist, but this is something that's kind of like there's the neocon sort of libertarian fixation on GDP, that's like the main thing that's important. This ties into like the consumerist thing. The only thing that's really important to a libertarian or to a neocon is, well, the United States is just so great. And we're so successful precisely because our GDP is so high. And that, like, imagine that being your pitch for why you're doing things politically, like why you're like if you're trying to determine what's wrong with the world, if you think that that's the most important thing, well, then you think that we don't have any issues. So yeah, you know, this new group of people that's literally being crafted out of this globalist model and all of these narratives. Yes, they're consumerists. They're tied to the government. They obviously don't have any roots that stretch beyond, you know, their formation of growing up in this postmodernist modern world. So, but yeah, money is definitely fundamental to it. It totally is.
Yeah, this libertarian. I mean, I don't know, because I've been back on Twitter for, well, about 9 months now, I guess. It's really flown back. but I've kept away. I've never really looked into BAP, Bronze Age Pervert. Mm. Something just gave me a bad feeling, honestly. I just had a bad feeling. I don't know, that's not even a condemnation of him or his work. I don't know about it. It's just that everything I heard gave me a bad feeling. So I just steered clear of it. And I've never regretted it because everything I continue to hear about it seems to confirm I made the right decision. I'm sure he's intelligent and whatever, all the rest of it. But anyone who is trying to discourage nationalism,
it was very convenient.
Yeah,
it's very convenient for him to do that because he's Jewish. So you know, right. he's a minority figure in our country, in our lands, and he, of course, like, what's his best interest is, you know, his people. And you know, making sure that, you know, a liberal world where we're not, you know, collectivists, that doesn't come to fruition. And he just so happens to, you know, like, apparently give really good insights on, you know, ancient history and stuff like that. But of course, he doesn't mention Sea People or ancient Israel, which is, you know, pretty, you know, telling. But you know, whether he has good intentions or not, you know, from what I've seen, I'm thinking it's not really that great for a variety of different reasons. I read his book. I think there's some spiritually, you know, there's things in there that are kind of off for a variety of different reasons. I don't think it's a good direction. And I think that philosophically, basically, you know, what was happened there with that community, with the manosphere and like the baposphere, is that that group of people has developed sort of you know, what is our main problem? BAP suggests is feminism, or women. But it just so happens that, like, you know, that's half of your race, right? White people, you know, half of your race are women. And so it's very convenient for him to say, no, there aren't any connections between groups of people. Where, you know, it's simply just women. Women are your biggest issue. And his book amplifies that. So I think that's problematic.
Well, it's insane. I mean, is he saying that white women just spontaneously sort of went off the rails?
Well, he says women in general, but the implication, you know, is just like obviously that community is very fixated. They're like, oh, no. Israel is not much of an issue. Zionism is not an issue, when it clearly is. You know, like China having its influence in our country is obviously problematic. But this group of people who are kind of taking over the cultural realm in the right wing or in like Frog Twitter, they are insistent that no, it's not Israel and Zionism isn't an issue, but it's just feminism and it's women. And they kind of have like this tongue in cheek way of going about it. So someone like H.P. Lovecraft recently had this meme where it showed like people controlling each other, like going down the list.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. It's a joke. It's a joke, but it's also not. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, look, this is exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. When I see something like that, I think, right, I'm going to give you a wide berth because it's bullshit. And yeah. I don't believe that you would put something like that out just as a complete joke. Like, I don't mean it at all. No, you must mean it in some way. Otherwise,
in some way. Because
You'd label it as a fucking joke.
Well, when H.P. Lovecraft, you know, he's a popular account. When he talks about anti-Semitism, he's very serious. He's very serious when he's talking about anti-Semitism. But when we're talking about women, it's just a joke, bro. You know, it's a way to shield yourself from, and you know, BAP does that too. It's a shield from actually taking responsibility for what you're saying.
So is H.P. Yeah. Lovecraft Jewish as well?
That I don't know, I can't say, but a lot of people seem to think so. But if he's, like, I understand Jews, they want to protect their people. They have their interests. I understand that. Every group of people has a right to, you know, make a case for themselves. But, you know, to, like, say, like, oh, one half of your group of people, like, women are a problem. Yes, feminism is definitely a problem. This is a big issue. But these people never give any prescription for what women should do. And also, they will counter-signal trads. And that's very interesting. Why counter-signal people who are traditional? Well, because those people want to start farms. They want to start families. They want to have a healthy lifestyle. Isn't that kind of odd? I find that strange.
I've seen this also with the Radfames, who I think are just awful. And
of course.
Yeah. And it just seems like people who are fucked up, and they see this example of someone who's trying to not be fucked up, and they're trying to find their way out of the degeneracy. So they attack it, and there's always something you can find. Like, well, she went through a bi phase when she was at college, so she's a fake. or he did this, yeah. He had an Indian girlfriend once, or whatever. There's always something that you can find. And it's just petty. And as for everything I see against the trans stuff, I mean, yeah, okay, it can be a bit nauseating, it can be a bit self-righteous, the trans stuff. But ultimately, these are just people trying to do the right thing. And I don't think they deserve to be attacked. I don't think they should be attacked. And here's the big thing. I think it's bad for the rest of us when they are attacked. Because they are setting an example and they are inspiring other people. They're showing that it is possible to do this. And I think that is exactly why you would attack them. Because you don't want everyone else to have that source of inspiration. It's to demoralize the rest of us, I think.
Yeah, definitely. That healthy direction that's somehow not attainable or something like that is very blackpilling. Everybody has been touched by degeneracy in the modern world. Everybody has been affected by the indoctrination that we've all experienced through watching Hollywood movies or whatever. And yeah, some people have a dark past, but the whole point of existence, the whole point of your existence, in my opinion, is to reconcile, you know, those issues, come to terms with what you have done wrong, and then set yourself on the right course. And then, of course, you know, impart that knowledge to your children. That's what it's all about.
Exactly. If you're going to demand that everyone is spotless and has never made mistakes or whatever, then you're really narrowing down the pool. I mean, there aren't going to
you
be
really,
many.
You really are. Well, yeah, and those people.
I should say Autistotle has issued a correction, so I should say this. H.P. Lovecraft is not Jewish, but you're thinking about the real H.P. Lovecraft. Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, he married a Jewish woman. We're not talking about
H.P.
Lovecraft, the author. We're talking about whatever his name is.
Yeah, sorry, I should have clarified that. H.P. Lovecraft, I think Zero or something. He's a big account on Twitter. And he and Bap oftentimes, you know, collaborate together or seem to have like a strong connection. And yeah, I think he's a writer and, you know, he has some funny posts. And, you know, I'm not saying that community doesn't make good points, because, you know, women can be pretty retarded sometimes, but and feminism is an issue. But it's just that, you know, it's clear that their leanings are, you know, they have sort of like this this narrative that they're pushing, in my opinion. And that might sound kind of conspiratorial, but I just see the same pattern presenting itself. One thing is for sure is that, yeah, it's not embracing traditionalism, which is what we need. You know, I think it's Leo Strauss. Yeah, I think it's Leo Strauss who BAP likes quite a lot, or takes inspiration from, it seems. You know, literally has a thing about not returning. That's my understanding, that return. He literally used the word return. That's not what you want. And I just find that very interesting coming from somebody who is, you know, from that particular tribe who is Jewish. You know, you don't want us to return. Well, of course, because you're a minority. All these other people are minorities that, you know, like are coming into our lands. The worst possible thing is for us to collectivize and decide, hey, you know what? We like doing our thing. You like doing your thing in Israel or your thing in China or whatever. Let's just all, you know, do our thing. But, you know, that's not beneficial to people who are existing in our lands right now.
Yeah, absolutely not. And I should say, just in case this does get back to them, I don't know anything about, and I said this at the start, I'm not very familiar with that. I'm not very familiar with whatever his name, I think it's H2O Lovecraft or something like that on Twitter. Yeah. I'm just saying that what I've seen is not my kind of thing. And I do see them counter-signaling the trad stuff. And I definitely see the rad femmes doing that. And it's always some angry woman who's, for whatever, she basically hates men. Either she hates men or she's clearly been hurt by men. And so she's taking it out on anyone who advocates, you know, the trad thing. Now, the other caveat to make here is that the trad thing can, as I say, can be a bit. There are people who I think see it as it's a grift. You know, there are people who make money from pushing this life or pushing this aesthetic. That's not good either. I've always tried you know, because my own work has tended, at least in the early years, it tended to attract people who were young men who were in a similar position to me, who were depressed and whatever. And I always tried to emphasize to them, you should be trying to get out of this. You know, I don't want this to be like a drug that you then keep coming back to you know, reinforce how depressed you are. That's obviously not healthy. I think, and it shouldn't be meaningless. You know, it should be meaningful to you, and that it should be part of your recovery. I think in the same way, the trad thing, you know, it's what, obviously it's pleasant in and of itself. But I think just to buy the T-shirt and not to do it is, I mean, it's a matter of, I think the point is obvious. It's just, I think people sometimes take refuge in the aesthetic instead of actually sorting themselves out. And I've said this about nationalism as well. Any ideology or, you know, lifestyle aesthetic can get in the way, can be a distraction from actually solving the problems in your life. It happens to loads of people. Politics is like that.
Yeah, definitely. But I do think you have to like start somewhere. And even if people are kind of faking it, they're kind of, you know, eventually they might make it, you know, the normie needs to kind of like put on the dress and like try to, you know, emulate the lifestyle. And then maybe it kind of starts to become something that's real. I do think that, you know, these communities, even the rad femmes have some points. They do.
Yeah, they do. Manosphere guys have
some points.
Yeah, I just think with the rad femmes, it just seems to come from bitterness.
Same with the manosphere people too. I think both groups of people are experiencing a backlash from feminism and from a lot of the things that have happened, you know, in the contemporary world revolving around male-female dynamics. I think what obviously needs to be done at the end of the day is people need to get over these differences, and they need to understand that, you know, the point of marriage, the point of being with someone else is to procure the future of the next generation. So we're literally not going to survive as a group of people if we can't get along with one another. So I'm not interested in bitterness towards men. I'm not interested in any of those things. I love my people. And that's the most important thing to me, is just, you know, my extended family is everything to me, because that's the group I'm a part of. You know, boomers can say, oh, we're just individualists, I'm just going to go on vacation. Sorry. At the end of the day, if you fall, you're not going to fall just by yourself. You're going to fall with everybody. You can't just say, I'm not a part of this extended family anymore, that is the European people. You are a part of that group of people, and we have a responsibility to continue that group of people, because it's been going on for forever. So passing the torch is important, and just like getting caught up in these like nitty gritty little details about how, you know, women did this or men did that or whatever. This is all political. That's very ridiculous.
I mean, we're not 5 years old. You know, we're not a bunch of kids trying to get the parent to believe us that the other one stole the lollipop. It's absurd.
Yeah.
Obviously, men and women bear their responsibilities for this. Ultimately, it should have been men who should have kept society in order, but they let women, they fell asleep at the wheel in a sense. But again, I'm not blaming all men, because it's what happens at the top of society. Ordinary men, again, wouldn't have had a fucking clue what was going on, and it just happened. And then women have got the vote, and then feminism. And then God knows the whole path. I want to clarify what I said about trans, because I sort of lost my train of thought there. What I mean is my only criticism of it is when it's someone who sells that lifestyle, but it's fake, right? When they're making money from selling this thing, but then they don't actually do it themselves. I mean, it's always possible to criticize someone for not living up to their principles enough, but that is an egregious case of it, where someone is just pumping out these really nice YouTube videos showing them it, but they never actually have kids. They never get married or whatever it is. You know, so it's, they're just selling a product then. It's not actually sincere. I want to emphasize one other thing, though. I think it's important not to get too bogged down in criticizing other people like this. In the end, you can always point out hypocrisy. You can always point out that someone hasn't lived up to this or that. In the end, that becomes a sort of obsession, I think, online for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. That's really well said, and I do feel like our collective, our extended family, European people of European stock, tend to be overly critical of themselves and what they're doing. We tend to overthink things, even on like a collective scale. I do think though that, you know, even though that's a good point about not, you know, over criticizing, I do think in trying to become more traditional, I think people are going to start to realize, which I think they already sort of have, is that, yeah, mostly it's like an aesthetic right now. And that it's almost like a 1950s, like the cottagecore thing is like 1950s European hybridization. But that's not true traditionalism. If people understood, like, you know, ancient Crete and what was going on that island, that's true traditionalism, and that would really freak out most people. That doesn't look like what you think it would. And that's like the root of our people are the, you know, the Minoans, and they're said to be the first Europeans. So if we're really going back to traditionalism, it's going to look very different than that. That's something we need to get back to.
That as well. I mean, it's not 1950s housewife, but I think. And Charlemagne in the chat said this. He's tired of these labels that people, you know, the fashionable aesthetics that people latch onto. In the end, what you need to do is just find a way to have a healthy life, and whatever works is fine. You know, I don't think people should get hung up on this stuff.
I agree. Ultimately, yes. And we'll solve it over time. We'll start to learn more about what traditionalism truly means. But I think it's just a good direction for us to be trying to figure that out. I think it's a great thing, and to counter signal it and to suggest that it's like worthless and like not something we should pursue. I mean, you know, that group of people that, you know, or the Baptist, or, you know, that frog Twitter thing, that group of people ultimately wants to stay in the modern world, because someone like Bapp suggests that, you know, the modern world isn't really the problem. It's all of these other issues. Well, no, going back to tradition, understanding what our roots are and what that looks like, and understanding that like truly and deeply, that is extremely important, or else our collective is going to fizzle out. We're going to die.
I mean, in the most simple terms, what this means is a household where the man is in charge, the woman supports the man, and they have children and raise them together. That's it. You know, I don't think there's a huge amount more. I mean, would you say, am I being inaccurate here? I would say that's fundamentally it. If you have that situation, and, you know, you've not got a drinking problem, and she's not in an open relationship or has an OnlyFans or something, then,
right?
I mean, then it's
surprisingly that's very common now. If we can just get the family unit back together for starters, I agree. That's the basic thing. You know, stop being degenerate, stop doing drugs, stop sleeping around with people. And, you know, just come together and make that, you know, your purpose of your life, children. Like, that's what marriage really is. Marriage is about creating this really nice, comfy environment for children. And of course, people want a European aesthetic to go along with that. So yeah, as long as the natural hierarchy is there, with the man at the top of, you know, the family, and, you know, like leading, like, you know, the whole family, like they used to, that structure really worked very well. There's no reason why, you know, it needs to change. We need to go back to that, because that's how families are developed. So I totally agree with that. That's definitely the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. There are lots of comments here, but I think someone called me a misogynist. I'm very sorry.
Oh, goodness. That's terrible for having a traditional take on relationships.
Well, look, it's obvious. I mean, for Christ's sake, of course the guy should be in charge. No woman respects a guy who isn't in charge of his own family.
Well, in charge of what? See, this, okay, let me just say something real fast. In charge of what? Men and women are different. They're equal in a sense, because they're so different that they need each other, but they're not the same. There are female tasks that a woman is supposed to do, and that gives her a certain amount of power, if you want to look at it that way. Because this is, remember, like, liberals are all about power. Oh, the man has the most power. That's not even true. women have a lot of power too in that dynamic, but it's feminine power. You don't give women positions of authority in like the government or in the military or at, you know, the head of the family in terms of like the things that a man would typically do, because it doesn't work. And women don't even like being in that position. You know, even women who are like, you know, like girl bosses, they get fatigued by having to make all the decisions, take care of the children, do all that stuff. To take care of a child, that is a massive endeavor. You have to be the boss of the children. And so the husband, he's like, okay, well, I'm going to take care of everything else so that you can do all of that stuff. How is that not like a really nice balance and distribution of power?
Absolutely. And it plays to the strengths of the sexes. They obviously have their own spheres. They have their own strengths. I cannot hold multiple things in my head. I just get panicked and stressed. And that's why I have to write everything down. I have to write lists. But women can deal with it amazingly well. I mean, it's almost sinister. They don't get stressed.
Yeah, I agree, actually.
They've got 10 things and they don't have to write them down. That kind of thing is amazing. But I'm not going to say, you know, therefore women are superior or something. That'd be obviously ridiculous.
No.
It's simply that men and women are different. And I think that is a key thing, that even something as fundamental, like that is pretty much the most fundamental, apart from the fact that we need oxygen and that we're carbon-based life forms, probably the next most fundamental truth is that men and women are different. And even that is now in doubt. You know,
it's the best thing that men and women are different.
Of course. Like,
acting as though this is a bad thing. This is what literally makes life. There's this lie that there's like an oppression in being a woman. And that like feminism, I want you to think about this. Is feminism about feminization? No, it's about making the woman masculine and making the men feminine. That's not, I don't want to be masculine. Like, I'm sorry, listen, I love men, but I like being a woman and I like my feminine roles. And I don't think that, like, I don't feel as though there's something wrong or weak or that I'm a misfortune for being a woman. My role is something that I'm honored to take on, just as a man should be honored. It's a lot of responsibility to be a man. Man has a lot of things that he has to do that, honestly, I don't really want to do. I'm not fit to do that. And so, you know, people being allocated in their right place, you know, per their gender, it should be viewed as an honor to like have a family and do your part, because you're not just working for yourself. And this is where it comes back to individuality. They've created this tension between the masculine and the feminine, like it's a competition, when really you're just working together. That's the whole point. You are coming together for not yourselves, but for the next generation, for your family. Is it just to look at marriage like it's pleasure and you're going to do this for me and I'm at the head of the household, or, you know, you're going to be my simp or something like that. That is individuality coming into play into the relationship. No, your job is to focus on the children, and you both work together, and taking out the trash sucks, and changing, you know, poopy diapers is not fun either. Nobody likes that. You know, there's no glorification in like going, you know, like working like a desk job like a man has to do. Not everybody gets to be a CEO of a big company. Like they tell women, like, oh, isn't it not fair that a guy gets to become a big CEO of a company and you have to like change diapers and stay at home? Who gets to do that? Who gets to be like a supermodel? You know, like nobody. We all just need to do our part, take out the trash, change the diapers. That's just life, because we have a larger goal we're all working towards. This is, the whole thing is ridiculous, honestly.
I remember Davis MJ O'Reilly. He was a YouTuber. I don't know if you've heard of him. He did this video once where he said they told women that they could have jobs and that they could have work. They could work. and then he said, but the truth is most work sucks.
Well, yeah.
Most jobs suck. You it's boring. It's filing numbers and crunching numbers, or it's doing manual labor. So the illusion is, you know, I think for a lot of women, it must take quite a lot of mental effort to keep up the belief, the delusion that this is how it should be. I shouldn't want to be looking after a family and a house and a man. I should be girl bossing it in the office. It must really take a lot out of women. And it's the women that I mean, obviously I feel sorry for men as well, but I do also feel sorry for women because the trick, the con of feminism is so awful. And so many of them, most of them only realize when it's too late. And I think it's a dreadful thing.
All to make money, all for money, and to become another group of people that the government can tax. That's literally what the program is to get you to be a part of the workforce as a woman, not to raise your children, so that the government can raise your children instead. The whole thing is just ridiculous. It should be an honor to raise your children. It should be such a privilege to do that. Yeah, like filing paperwork. It's just like another chore. It's not to be glorified.
It's difficult. It takes a lot out of you. And that's why a guy will devote himself to a career, to a job, and give himself to it, you know, in order to look after, for a cause, as in my case, or in order to look after a family.
Can benefit your people. The masculine role is to, like, the feminine is to go inward into the family and basically, like, think about how powerful this is to teach your children, to prime them to become the next generation of people. You can literally create, like, the next generation of people to come by, like, the children are the most important group of people that you want to interact with. That's a really beautiful thing. And then the masculine is on the outside, and any activistic work that a man does, any movie that a man makes, whatever it might be, like this fantastical thing, that is supposed to contribute to the collective. You know, like that's the point. Like anything that you're doing is really just benefiting, you know, the extended family that you're a part of. So it's not even like what I'm saying is that it's not even divorced from your family. That too wraps back around to your family. That's how I view it.
Yeah. I agree. There are a few super chats, but is there anything else? Right. I think we've actually inadvertently, one way or another, roundabout way, covered everything that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
So it's just not been structured as we'd planned, but it seems to have worked out. So there are a couple of super chats. If anyone wants to post one, do so now. And here we go. Okay, maybe next time says, Gift has a wonderful force of analysis. There we go.
Oh, interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, Gallic Glory says she. And this is a very affectionate message about you, Gifts. Gallic Glory says she has the beauty, she has the brains. Did somebody say total package? There you go.
Thank you.
Obviously a fan.
Thank you.
And Restitutor Orbis says Gifts. Ungiven, and then a positive symbol. So thank you very much. That's nice.
Thank you.
And okay, there have been lots of positive comments. Someone says, I'm glad she came back this year, a positive guest. And okay, and Fan of the Era says, thanks for the content and showing your faces to give this beautiful message. We appreciate you both. Well, that's nice.
Thank you.
That's very nice. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you for that. All right. And I think that's... Oh, yes. Here we go. Okay. All right. Hold on a second.
Okay.
What path led you to the dissident right?
Honestly, going to art school. I've talked about this quite a bit, but yeah, going to art school really radicalized me. Just seeing, because, you know, like this was quite a while ago, but, you know, you kind of see the degeneracy that's coming next by going to art school. And I think, you know, you have experienced the same. You kind of know what's like on the horizon, because that's like the cutting edge ground for like culture and the ideas that are going to like be implemented next. And yeah, just going to art school and seeing, you know, the ideas that they were pushing, like I got to see liberalism and, you know, the degeneracy that was coming next before most people did. And it really made me realize that, you know, I didn't really have a place in the art world anymore, that like, it wasn't representing me in any way. I'd have to become transgender, or I'd have to be Black or something like that. And that just rung to me as very, very strange. You know, to be an artist in the art world, you have to have some sort of, you know, my minority status. And since I wasn't checking any of those boxes because I wasn't a feminist and I didn't get that stuff, you know, it made me really start to wonder about things. And then the 2016 election happened, and now here I am.
All right. K-Max asks the following. Gifts, as an Irish-American, what was your reaction to Keith Woods and Conor McGregor's tweets about the migrant attacks there? The Irish government seemed to blame McGregor rather than the migrants attacking Irish people.
Obviously what's going on there is really horrible, and they're trying to limit speech. In general, obviously I think what's going on there is terrible. You know, it's important for the Irish people to maintain their collective identity and to be able to talk about the things that are going on. And yeah, it's a real travesty. I quite like Keith Woods a lot, and you know, seeing what's happening to the Irish people is you know, really sad, because I am an Irish American. Well, what was the thing about Conor McGregor though? I missed that.
Their tweet, his and Keith Woods tweets about the situation in Ireland. Is it disturbing to you, I guess?
Yeah. They're furthering globalism and a push in that direction and away from the collective identity of the Irish people. And they're basically just putting a muzzle on them. You know, you're not allowed to talk about this horrible event that happened where, you know, this migrant stabbed, a couple of children and a woman. And I will say that, you know, the Irish getting as upset as they did about what happened really should be an example to all of us of you know, like the energy that we should really have. You know, when something awful like that happens in any other European country, it's not really met with that level of passion. So to me, that the anger that was felt where they went rioting in the streets, that's completely normal and acceptable behavior. And then the government was acting like that was, you know, something to be alarmed about. So if we can continue to have that momentum, to have that energy, despite what they're telling us, that we should feel shame for being upset about those things, I think we really have a good chance at surviving. But yeah, if we don't have the energy that they were exhibiting there, well, we're not going to make it.
Exactly. It was a completely ordinary and healthy and natural reaction to your people being brutalized, especially children. How could you expect them not to get angry at that? It would be bizarre if they didn't. And indeed, whenever something like this happens and there isn't an uprising of anger and outrage, I think it's sinister. I think it's worrying. It's depressing. When a public just accept this stuff being done to them, that's a terrible sign. Yeah. And it indicates complete defeat and weakness. So the thing is, right. And I'm not advocating, you know, rioting or violence or whatever. I'm just saying, what the hell else do you expect to happen? What could the madness?
And there is one other thing. They, you know, when Antifa takes to the street for a cause, you know, for minorities, or when, you know, African-Americans or migrants in Europe take to the streets, what will the hegemon say? Oh, well, this was a proper exercising of their, you know, their oppression, their feelings of oppression being expressed in an activistic format. But the same isn't granted to us. You know, people that are of European stock, we're not allowed to feel that stress and to release it. So there's obviously, you know, they're not exactly being fair is what I'm saying. The argument, you know, like, it's okay for them to be violent, but we can't in the streets on occasion when we're actually legitimately upset for good reason. It's crazy. Yeah.
Of course, it's the usual complete double standard, shameless double standard, where you know, black people can be given space to destroy. Remember that?
Yeah, so,
understandable that they would want to riot and set fire to buildings and so on.
So violence is okay when they're allowing violence to happen. Some violence is okay in their opinion. And I'm not for violence. I don't want people to take to the streets and be violent. But clearly they're not like applying it evenly to everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Gifts. This is from K-Max. Gifts. Can you tell us about this stream on Destiny and Hunter Avalon? A man like, I don't know about Hunter Avalon, but a man like Destiny in an open marriage, who would have guessed that it would end in divorce? I mean, I don't like going into people's private lives, but it is public and he's made a video about it himself. I didn't watch it. All I know is he's a massive streamer, must be very rich, and yet he couldn't get... this is what I don't understand. How can a guy like him not find a woman who would be loyal to him and in a monogamous relationship with him? I mean, I don't understand. But anyways, there's something that you know about this?
So my next video is on the topic, and it's not meant to be drama. I'm not interested in drama. But, you know, culturally speaking, these figures are significant. They both have a non-traditional stance or even, you know, an open relationship stance on how they conduct themselves in the context of a relationship, even within, you know, the context of marriage. And, I'm just sort of breaking that down in my next video, which comes out this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm not so much interested in the drama, but just the implications of these people who are very popular, like Destiny, projecting out into the world, trying to, you know, change the culture, insisting that that type of relationship is healthy or that it's good. Yeah, Destiny is in a divorce now. And he insisted that, you know, that relationship was going to work or that it's just as valid as like a more traditional approach, like a Christian would, you know, get married and be monogamous. But then also Hunter Avalon, you know, he allegedly did OnlyFans with his wife and he has kids and stuff like that. And there are just so many people, like statistically, if you're looking at like everything, the trajectory of our culture is to accept that kind of behavior, that's okay. That's not good for kids. That's not even good for people as individuals. You know, I mean, it's so bad that, you know, I can't say what's going on with his current girlfriend, but, you know, I don't know if there was something weird going on there. I'm not interested in the drama, but, you know, she has like she's obviously a liberal and has unconventional views on, you know, relationships. And so does he. In any case, someone recently came to their house who this girl was previously dating for like 11 years and tried to kill them. So the point is that the sacredness of relationships is not being understood. And the reason why people got married and like took things as seriously as they did wasn't just so that they wouldn't cheat on each other, but because, you know, when you're invested in a person for, you know, upward of like 11 years and then you break that and you like go with another guy, this is why marriage is important, to like avoid, you know, things like this. So, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently Destiny was paying for the rent of his wife's boyfriend's apartment.
What?
Incredible.
Oh man.
Who knows? I don't know if that's true. And I don't really care. I mean, I'm guessing he's said this publicly. I don't know how else it could possibly get out, unless the boyfriend let it.
Oh goodness gracious!
Whatever.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. So here is another question: which do you think is more important, the white birth rate issue, the white fertility rate, or immigration? I mean, I don't know. We're not really in a position where we can choose, but what would you say to that?
That's hard. I don't really know. I'd have to look at the stats and see which one is elevating quicker. I guess the one we have most control over are birth rates. You know, if we decide that we want to, you know, up our numbers and create a culture around that and do that, then we can increase the numbers. But obviously immigration is an issue because, you know, they're probably flooding in more people than we're obviously well, that's true. We're not meeting the demands of the amount of people who are flooding in. So I guess given all of that, probably it's a little bit of both, but probably immigration. Yeah, I think that would be the bigger issue, actually, because that is happening quicker. It's a more pressing issue in the here and now. It takes a long time to get, you know, have children and stuff like that. So I don't know. How do you feel? Do you feel like that's correct? Probably immigration.
I just think that both matters are equally are critical. So I don't really think there's a need to choose between them because they're both very important.
Yeah. So, at the end of the day, that's my stance too.
Yeah. All right. And does gifts follow U.S. presidential politics much? Are you a fan of Donald Trump, or is Trump just a vehicle for our ideas to grow in size?
Yeah, I do follow politics, though I wouldn't say I'm as involved in politics as I used to be, or I don't think politics are as important as other people do. I'm also a woman, to be honest. I'm more in the culture realm, the art realm. But yes, I do follow politics, and I think obviously most of it is theater. As far as Trump is concerned, because I don't think that there is necessarily a political solution. Obviously, we need to be making advances there, but I think culture is where we can actually affect change. But in any case, as far as Trump goes, my opinion is that Trump has kind of already fulfilled his purpose. Not that I don't want him to win or anything like that, but I think his victory, the victory that he had in 2016 was mostly cultural. And it basically led us all, you know, or at least for me, it affected me greatly. So I think as like a cultural figure, he did far more than he did in the political realm. He was basically stopped at every corner from doing the things that he wanted to do, which again is just another point in favor of you're working with a political system. The political system is basically owned by the people in power. You know, like you're not... You know, Trump being reelected, I don't necessarily think is going to, at this point, he might even kind of be, not compromised, but he has an allegiance, because he's a boomer, he has an allegiance to Israel. So I just feel like his time is done. But of course, I support him. I mean, I do really like Trump. And who else are we going to vote for at the end of the day? There really isn't anyone else, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, I guess that's all the super chats. Let me just check if there are any others on. No, there aren't. Okay. All right. Well, this has been great. Was there anything? Was there something I was going to pick up on? I don't think so.
I think we did. Yeah,
I think we did it. Yeah, it was a good good stream, good exploration of the different issues. So. Yeah, I think this has been a worthwhile stream. There have certainly been lots of people saying that they've enjoyed it. So,
thanks.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was great. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. You're welcome. All right. Well, I've enjoyed this. So thank you for coming on. Let's see. Tomorrow night, it's 4, because there are going to be some nights when there are 5 streams. I think two nights like that. But I'll just have to get through it somehow. But tomorrow night it's 4. It's UK Column, Lower World Diaries, Myth of the 20th Century, and then Endeavour. So that should be an interesting night. But in the meantime, this has been a good night, and I've enjoyed this stream. So, Gifts, thank you for appearing on Millennial 2023.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. Sometimes the old ways are the best. To send Millennial Woes some special Yuletide cheer by post, you can use the P.O. Box. Address on screen now.
All aboard.
Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.